We have 6 billion smartphones in the world right now capable of taking high-resolution photos and video. There's a million people at any given moment airborne with windows looking out into our atmosphere, and your best evidence for aliens is some fuzzy lights that on classified video by the government? Really?
They say I have a brain. I say it's not there. Do you really think a brain is under my hair? I've been thinking about everything, and I'm pretty sure that I do not have a brain. Ever see my own brain? I don't think so. Call the doctor, make appointment, have a seat. No insurance, can't do MRI. Right? Yeah, right now I know that my brain is just another life. Psyop, it's a psyop. Don't have a brain, just another psyop. Psyop, it's a psyop. Don't have a brain, just another psyop. 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 Don't have a brain, I know it's just a psyop. Psyop, it's a psyop. Don't have a brain, just another psyop. If I can't see it, then it's not true. And I know that my skull is not filled with goo. Then how do you think I'm thinking that your brain theory sinks? You say you have a brain, that it's in your head, connected to your ears, your eyes, your spine, and skeleton. I say then prove it, you say don't need to. I drop the mic and walk away, yeah, I got you. Psyop, it's a psyop. Don't have a brain, just another psyop. Psyop, it's a psyop. I don't have a brain, I know it's just a psyop. Psyop, it's a psyop. Don't have a brain, no, it's just a psyop. Psyop. It's a psyop. Don't have a brain, no, it's just a psyop. Psyop, 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 psyop. I don't have a brain, it's just another psyop. Psyop, 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 psyop. I don't have a brain, I know. It's just another psyop. I don't have a brain.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
That's Psyop by Jim Morrissey, and I want to thank Texador Records for allowing me to play that. It's at the top of the charts, and it deserves to be. What a banger. Hi, everybody. I'm Duncan. You're listening to the Doug Guttrussell Family Hour podcast, and I am pleased to announce that we have a new baby in the house, a wonderful little girl, and I'm in babyland. I'm in paradise. My brain is pumping out all kinds of weird neurotransmitters, oxytocin, and God knows what else is going on. But when you have a new baby in the house, it's like having a little rising sun that's around you all day. In this case, a rising daughter, but you know what I mean. It's like a sunrise. It's incredible. I'm so happy. I feel so buoyant and joyful. How can you not be when you're around some kind of radiant super intelligence, something that has yet to take on any kind of personality other than the past life imprints and the basic primordial life force. By the way, I didn't say that. The baby told me to say that. Speaking of the baby, I want to give a shout out to all of the wonderful people who helped my wife bring this wonderful child into the world. I personally feel so indebted to these wonderful women because there's only so much a guy can do. And, you know, Diablo 4 happened to come out exactly around the last part of the pregnancy, so it's not like I could be hands-on the way that I wanted to. So thank you to these wonderful women. Lauren Foreman, our midwife with Sacred Space Midwifery. She's a home birth midwife, did all of Aaron's prenatal and postpartum care, and she was with us every step of the way for 9 months and after two. Allison, if you're out there, this was the hospital midwife. We ended up in the hospital. She is an expert at turning babies. So she essentially had to fist Aaron to get the baby turned the right way while I watched in awe. Emily Stanwyck, our doula. My God bless you, Emily. She came with zero notice and held Aaron's hand while she screamed like an Irish barbarian. And Tori at Lioness Birth Training for feeding us and helping us during postpartum. I got to eat the food too. The food is technically for Aaron, but I ate a lot of it. So I'm sorry about that. Tori, thank you for making enough for my hairy ass. If you are in need of any kind of birth help, these are the people you need to reach out to, and all the links you need to find them will be at duncantrussell.com. Thank you so much, oh great birth witches, goddesses. They really are witches, like in the positive sense of the word. I don't know any other way to put it. They're right there with their faces smashed into the life force. Super cool mystical people. I hope you will consider working with them if you are lucky enough to be bringing a baby into the world. Also, I won't name any names, but a few of them helped me with my necromancer build in Diablo 4. They are there to support the husband too. What a podcast we have for you today. One of my dear friends is here with us today. You know her from your mom's house or Where My Mom's At. She's one of the funniest people I know living on planet Earth. Christina Segura is here with us today. Before we jump into this episode, I would love for you to consider subscribing to my Patreon. It's at patreon.com/DTFH. You subscribe, you get access to our thriving, growing, abundant, glorious community on our Discord server, and also you get commercial-free episodes of the DTFH. And even better, no matter what tier you subscribe at, you can come hang out with us once a week, every Friday. We gather, we start in the morning with a nice 20-minute meditation, and then we ramble about everything. I feel so lucky to be part of this community, and I hope you will consider joining us. It's patreon.com/DTFH. Finally, I have some live stand-up shows coming up starting the 8th of September. If you're out there in Illinois, Rosemont, Illinois, come see me at Zany's. After that, I'm headed to Tacoma, to the Tacoma Comedy Club. I hope you'll come see me there. Then I'm going to be at Cobb's in San Francisco. That's October 23rd. After that, I'm at Helium in Philadelphia. Then the Spokane Comedy Club in November. And then finally, I'm going to be in Salt Lake City, Utah at Wise Guys. Then December, you could come see me in Charlotte, North Carolina. These tickets are moving fast, friends. So don't sleep. Get them now. Be organized. Make me feel good. It fills me with a kind of horrific, narcissistic glee when my shows sell out way ahead of schedule. Please inflate my ego, pump it up, make it big, swollen, veiny, oozy. And oh, I almost forgot. I added a new date. I'm going to be at the Comedy Mothership September 17th in Austin, Texas. You can find all these links by going to duncantrussell.com. They're not all up there yet, but they will be. Or just go to the website of any of the clubs I mentioned, and you can get tickets there. All right, everybody, please welcome back to the DTFH, Christina Segura. Mestito, welcome to the DTFH. I'm so happy to see you today.
Buddy, I am so thrilled to be here. What an honor. I mean, everything from the caliber of guests that you've had to the fine music, celebrities like Justin Bieber have made songs for the...
I know. I know. Thank you so much. Look, I'm lucky. I couldn't believe it when Bieber sent me the song that is actually that people just listened to in the intro for this podcast, PsyOps. I mean, it's amazing, but the caliber of guests just got better because you're here.
Stop.
Because you're here. And I look, you know, the other day when I got to do your podcast, you texted me and I just missed the text. And you were asking last minute if I could do your podcast. And I was so excited. And then the next text was like, oh, forget it. But I love doing your show. It is so fun. And you and Tom have just got such an inspirational operation running. Like every time I walk in there, I'm like, oh my God, this is the mecca of podcasting. Like how many sets do you have? Five functioning, awesome podcast sets, an incredible group of people working with you. How did you do that?
Dude, first of all, you're embarrassing me. You know, we're comedians. We don't like compliments. So I'm already, I'm in a pool of shame right now just listening.
Sorry.
But first of all, I have so much fun just talking to you. I feel like you're one of those few people that has such a great frequency. You know, people are blessed enough to listen to your podcast and get like a sense of who you are, but actually being with you, I mean, I think you are like, you might be an alien. You might be a celestial being that is having a meat experience, a meat body experience. I think you are. You're not from this world.
Listen, none of us are. And I'll tell you, I don't think I'm going to pick the meat experience. Like if there is like some kind of cosmic spa where you're getting to pick your incarnations, who really is like, let me be wrapped in meat that has to shit and can catch on fire. Like I'm assuming there's all these other things you could pick, like cosmic cloud of orgasmic sentient dust but who's like, yeah, I want to be hairy. I want to be fucking irritated. And then most of my life, is there anything, you got anything meaty and irritated?
And sweaty. Yeah. I'm sweaty and anxious and sad and then happy. And then like all these different states of being. And like, I'm full disclosure, I'm weaning off of the Lexapro right now. And so I was like, you know, for like a few years, because I did it after I had my second child. I was so anxious and depressed. And now I'm like, oh my God, like this is all the range of human emotions that I forgot. Because I was all, everything is great. La, la, la. Like I totally was in a Lexapro haze.
That's what Lexapro does to you?
It did for me, yeah. It made me really happy for like 4 years.
Aaron! Order Lexapro! I need it. Oh my God. They should make that the jingle for their commercial. What you just sang is I've never been more sold on an antidepressant.
I never feel anything. La la la.
I haven't felt anything for years. Well, so you're feeling the downs and the peaks and the lows now.
Yeah, I think before like the lows would come and then I would try to beat them down. Because Lexapro is like, don't do that, la, 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 you're fine. And then your brain just changes the subject for you.
Wow.
It's like, let's talk about kittens. Let's get on TikTok. Okay. Wow. And then go with the flow.
Wow.
So now pain is like, all right, well, you can go there for a minute and feel whatever it is. And then just dip back into like normal stasis, whatever that is for me. Is that what human experience is? Like you're kind of like, la, la, la. And then you kind of get fucked around and then you go back into... your baseline?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's like there's so many My friend's a psychiatrist, and like he was explaining to me just sort of environmental triggers, like how you, when you, I don't know, you're four and God knows what you saw or heard or some rotten thing happened, and you don't remember that things ever. You don't, but it gets locked up in your body. And so if, you know, some time of year comes around where that thing happened and the wind blows just the right way, you will suddenly experience like an anxiety attack or depression or God knows what. And you won't even know why, because you can't remember that you're, this awful thing happened and your wonderful body, which wants to keep you alive as long as possible, was like, all right, they're not going to remember this shit. So let's just make it so in the very beginning of fall, let's make it so they get really, really stressed out and careful. Because I think this thing happens at the beginning of fall every year.
Yeah.
That's how dumb your body is. Okay, so the beginning of fall must be when all dads throw an ashtray at moms in front of kids. So let's make sure that she's very careful at the beginning of fall. And now you've got this thing locked in. Yeah, it sucks. So yeah, I mean, yeah, there's so much, I think, that's happening to us that we try to rationalize with shit that's going on around us. Oh, I feel like this because, you know, Obama, because of that weird shit Obama wrote to his friend, or you
what
know,
a beautiful what letter. By the way, I was like, forget the homosexuality. The letter was so elegantly written. I didn't even understand what the fuck he's talking about.
If he sent me that letter, like if we were in college and Obama sent me that letter, I would be at his dorm room sucking his dick in like 10, like 10 minutes. I'd be over there with some Hermann Hesse playing some Nick Drake and just blowing Obama for hours. What a seductive, romantic man. Like, my God.
Like, brilliant.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
He gets all notes, too. He's like, you know, can you imagine a 21-year-old hot Obama? He's physically at his peak.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, every day I fantasize about making love to men. But then, you know, why can't we all just bang each other is basically, right? I don't know, I'm not even sure I'm getting the letter. I'm like, yeah, I've had that idea, but I didn't say it so eloquently. Like,
No. What? I mean, I read some of his other letters. They're all just incredible. I mean, like, you see how he became president. Phenomenal. Like, phenomenally romantic letter writer. And yeah, but I it's funny how like people try to use that to like fuck with him. Like, there's other things you can fuck you. Like, he joked about drone attacks. Like, he joked about drones blowing up people in Afghanistan. He's a piece of shit, you know? Like, if you, let's say you had, had a drunk driving accident and killed a bunch of kids, and then later down the line at some talk you were giving, you made a joke like, don't forget, sometimes I'm a little sloppy at the wheel. Everyone would be like, oh, yikes.
What level of like psychopathy do you have to be that unaware of like how you're coming off?
Right.
And also, like, people don't even write letters anymore. They just text message. So, like, when you die, and they're like, Duncan Trussell, the great comedian, left a legacy of fine text messages. Like, what are they going to look for? People's letters. And, like, back, right? Like, you read, like, love letters that Hitler sent Eva Braun or whatever. Yeah. Nothing now that's comparable to letters, like podcasts where we're like talking about our shits and stuff.
Yeah. No, it's not going to be the Obama style legacy. It's going to be like President Krong, a series of emojis President Krong sent to Lord Gregor. Beautiful emoji placement. Two alien heads. Two alien heads, eye roll, and a thumbs down. And that was the beginning of World War V.
Right. And dick pics. There's going to be a gallery of people's genitals. Because, I mean, I don't send my genitals, but that this is what this generation does. That's what it's going to be. And it's cool. Like, we can't really shame people for sexuality anymore. Because I think Obama's homosexual inclinations were a gigantic nothing burger. Was anybody like, whoa, like, okay.
That was a nothing burger. It didn't even work. Whoever was trying to, like, blow up Obama with that beautiful, romantic fucking letter just, like, made everyone, like, wish he was president again. It's all it did. Like, from the left to the right, everybody's like, God, wow, look at that. He can form complete sentences. Right. Oh, my God.
It's not a tweet, like a dumb fuck tweet. Yeah, unreal.
Yeah, it's not a dumb tweet or just some, like, incoherent stammering, which has been the last two presidents. Like, one is like, I'll beat you into pulp with boot on face. And the other one is like, come on, man. It's Christmas. Grand it's grass. Whoa, lay on the grass. And that was America. Like, what are you talking about?
It is astounding that in this entire land, we couldn't find decent presidents. We can't find a guy. Just give me a sane white guy to run things again. But fine. Or just anybody sane.
It speaks well for our country that we have gone through, what, almost 8 years of two, like, incoherent psychopaths. And we're still, like, the country is still functioning.
I know.
It's amazing. Like, it's incredible that, guess the president really, all that we know now is the president doesn't really matter, right? Because they both in their own way have been just so phenomenally horrific at talking. Like, you know what I mean? We don't, whatever their economic shit is, I don't understand. Maybe it was good, maybe it was bad, but I know talking, and they both suck at it.
So bad. Can't even communicate. Just like the one thing you got to do, just stand up and say the words, puppet, and nobody can do it.
No. Can't even talk. You don't need to talk well as the president of the United States. You can just... And then we shrimp, pink creatures. Everyone loves a shrimp. Goodbye. Like, you're fine. It's like, okay, I guess that's what we have to accept. It's a democracy.
Oh, my God. He is half dead. And is he going to run again?
I have no idea. I don't know if either of them is going to run again. I don't know. I don't understand why there can't, like... I know that everyone hates Biden, or half the people. I don't know what the situation is popularity-wise with Trump or Biden, other than I know at least half the country hates one or the other, right? Half the country hates.
Yeah.
So why can't we do a vote? Why? I don't understand why there can't be a vote. Should they be allowed to run? Or like, why don't we wipe the slate clean? And just take them out of the picture and do an election without either of them. Just wipe the slate clean. We fucked up. We wanted to see what would happen. It's almost like a reality show. Let's take someone at the end of a very long cocktail party and make them president. And see how the country runs. Right.
We're voting them off the island. But this is what's exciting, is that we are now making way for our new alien overlords.
Yes.
So maybe this is the perfect time, with disclosure happening. Is this where this is heading? Are we going to have a tall, what is it? The tall blondes with the blue eyes?
The Nordics. Yeah, those are the hot aliens. Apparently there's many species. The Nordics are the ones you want to get abducted by. Not the grays.
Well, I hear the grays are, like, not really personable, that they're like little robots, you know, they're not very fun.
Yeah, they this is what I've heard about the grays. They smell awful because that's how they piss. They piss through their sweat and they piss like ammonia. So they smell like shit. They smell terrible. Whereas I think the Nordics smell kind of like rosemary, you know, bergamot, maybe just a nice kind of earthy smell to them. They're just, But the grays, you end up on a gray. You know, like, did you ever have a hamster?
No, but we did in our class, and I remember the shavings were always covered in piss.
I think that's what gray smell like, hamster shavings. That's the smell. Like kind of ammonia.
What a disgusting animal, a creature to have. I think a hamster is like so useless. I remember we used to have it in that plastic ball in the classroom, and it would like run. And then the most sadistic kid in the class would grab the ball and shake it.
Yeah, inevitably. That... The hamster is in an incomprehensible eldritch hell. Like it doesn't have the brain to assimilate what it knows. Whatever is like putting it in the ball is not hamsters. It's whatever it is like terrifying, furless, which means disease. Like it speculates. Is it giant sick hamsters? Yeah, it's hell. And yeah, giving a classroom of kids a hamster is horrible.
And then every now and then a little hand comes in, a smelly little candy-covered hand comes into your cage and rips you out of your piss shavings, which you're finally used to the smell of your own urine and your things. And then they take you out for torture.
Yeah, it's time to go in the torture ball. Time and you run because you're like, fuck, just maybe I could get this ball out the door, just fucking maybe down the hall. I don't know what's on the other side of the hall. Maybe more hamsters to save me. I bet I just have to get out of this. And no, you're never getting out, motherfucker. You're gonna go back in that thing and you're gonna run on that wheel to train. Uh-huh. You're like, okay, I'll just train, I'll get faster. Maybe I can get that ball out of here. Hamsters, you're right. And it's a sad pet to get. They don't live that long, I don't think. And like they just escape inevitably. And then there you got now you have a rat in your house, basically.
You know what's so interesting is that I was watching that show Alone on Netflix where it's so amazing. And I love it too. I love the idea of being able to live off the land, deal with the isolation involved, because I think that's ultimately what takes people out before the parasites. Though, if you don't get parasites from eating wild beaver and squirrels, it's like, how are they even fucking catching a squirrel? First of all, I have them in my backyard. You know how hard it is to hear a squirrel? And there's motherfuckers on that show that are like, I can hear a squirrel. Like, how? Dude? And then he takes his fucking bow and arrow and he shoots it. And Tom was like, you know, those are just rats, basically. Like, squirrels are tree rats. And
tree rats.
Like, oh, my God, dude, I didn't even realize. Because they're so cute and their tail's so fluffy, you know?
Yeah. They're rats. God knows what's in any, like, that's the thing with Naked and Afraid. The whole genre of survival shows is you will like the top idiot who's been without water for a day, which I understand that is fucked up, will go to the first muddy pool of water and be like, it'll probably be okay. And just drink in the Sahara. Like, that's probably not even water. It's like hyena piss. And there you just, and then look at the other one who's, like, smarter in this smug way. Like, not bad, not the best. You know, but you don't see 6 months down the line after the show is over, the taping's over, and they go to the bathroom, and they just shit worms. Just shit unidentified Saharan worms that have been living inside
Oh, well, yeah, because we were wondering. So I watched the latest season. I don't know if you've seen that one. And
no.
And Cam think, and they're in like just nowhere Canada and like winter, bro. And this guy's eating, he catches a beaver, which is a huge windfall. Like you catch a beaver, pretty good for like 3 weeks.
That's a lot of food.
It's a lot of food. And then he makes it into jerky, and then he renders the fat, and he's eating the fat. And then, of course, lo and behold, that will destroy your guts. This poor guy.
It's like beaver fat? Beaver fat's bad for you? Aaron! Are you joking? Aaron! We can't eat beaver fat anymore! Oh my God. Beaver it fucked up his stomach?
So bad. And this is one of those hardcore... Like, I found that on that show, the people who do the best are the most traumatized. They're so traumatized from their childhoods that they've learned how to live without people. It's so cool. Yeah. But yeah, it just was like he was spraying out of his ass for days, and they have to tap out. Because could you imagine the liability if somebody dies on your survival show?
Well, that's, I think, is in when you're in production – and you realize that you have footage of one of your contestants blasting out beaver fat diarrhea. Everyone's just like, fuck yes. Fuck yes. Are you guys getting that? We got to make sure we get a shot of that pungent, curdled puddle of beaver fat shit. Because this is gold.
Yeah.
This is gold. Yeah. But then, yeah, they're like, okay. How long does he have to live? 3 days? Are you sure? We can't extend it to 4? Okay, 3. Okay, we'll get him at the very end of the 3rd day. Because they want to they want to sweep in right before they die. They want to get them right to the brink of death. But they can't die on the show, or it'll, insurance-wise. They got to get them to the hospital. Then it's not their responsibility anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you think about eating off the land like that. All those things all those animals have worms. Like, you just drink a bad margarita in Mexico and you're trash, bro. Like, your guts are dust for like a month, dude.
Dude, Silver Lake, probably 10 years ago. Do you remember? Did you ever eat at that? It might still be there. There's a vegan restaurant there called Flora or something like that. Flora, floral. So like I went down there and I was, you know, I'm like, I'm going to be healthy. I'm going to eat vegan. I'm going to get a vegan salad. And I remember like I'm walking in and there's this dude who works there sitting on the curb in these nasty leather pants. And like, I think he had like shitty, like leather suspenders on. He didn't look healthy. He was kind of like, I don't know, just like you could see, he didn't seem healthy. He's just smoking. And I remember watching the way he like stabs the cigarette out, but I was hungry. I'm like, I'm going to go and eat. I got a salad there and I got home and like, it was the worst bout of food poisoning I ever had in my life. Just days of vomiting, shitting. And I called them. I'm like, man, you guys, there's something in your food, man. I just ate there and got the worst food poisoning. And they were just like, okay, well, thanks for letting us know. And I'm like, what are they gonna do? Like, they don't care. Yeah, it was so bad. And that's at a restaurant where there's theoretical health codes. So yeah, well, you're out in the woods. Come on. Wiping your ass with bark or...
Oh my God. Yeah, I couldn't imagine. I mean, I'm so stupid. I didn't realize you could get sick from like vegetables, from like not meat.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They'll get you. Vegetables are like just, well, also because like they come in contact with, like in some shitty restaurant, you know, in the back, they just throw salad next to the chicken, a little bit of chicken juice splashes on the salad, then just everyone's sick and dying. They don't, so much faith. We have so much faith when we go out to eat. So much faith. Have you
ever worked in a restaurant?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You were a dishwasher. Yes. Samesy. Not a dishwasher, but a server. And I worked in an Indian restaurant at one point. Yo, like I will never. Dude, the fucking mango chutney was in a bucket. And then it was in a dirty like bag in a bucket. And then the server would put their whole arm in the plastic bag to scoop out the mango chutney.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Backstage. backstage. The I remember making the what is it? You mix ranch with ketchup to make some.
Oh, Thousand Island.
Thousand Island is just ketchup and ranch. And you know, that's the shit job. The dishwashers do that. They don't, the servers aren't doing that. That's the dishwashers back there with like a mop handle and a bucket, just spraying, not even measuring. You're just waiting for it to go like a certain color pink. And you're like, all right, I guess that's Thousand Islands. No one's going to give a shit.
Ugh.
Oh, God. Oh, God. We just have so much faith. So much faith. You just assume you come in. You're like, you've made a reservation because it's a fancy place. Oh. And they're all dressed in like really nice outfits and the lighting's perfect, but you don't see the back. You don't see the underpaid line chefs who are all like sick of working there and coming up or coming down. They've been partying all fucking night. They're banging waitresses and waiters in the walk-in. Ugh.
Yeah. Or even just if you work. So I worked at a French restaurant that doesn't exist anymore. It was called Moustache Cafe. It was across from the Improv, and I was a waitress there. And if you've ever seen a restaurant during the daytime, like, you know, you go to these nighttime dinner places, but if during the daylight or even at a bar, and they turn those lights on and you see even just the floors, bro, like, yo. And that smell of like, there's this very distinct smell too, of like stations. It's like, it smells like rancid ketchup. It's the same smell of comedy. Like when you walk through the bins, to go into the kitchen and then to the room. It's so funny. It's so humbling, right? Like, every time you think you're awesome in comedy, you're like, oh, I'm walking through the dumpsters again.
Yeah, that's right. And hopefully you're brought back to the service industry days. And you remember, motherfucker, you could easily land back there again. You better deflate that fucking ego balloon. You know, because this is reality. But wow, that's nuts. I ate at that place by the Improv. What's it called again?
It was there called Moustache Cafe.
Yeah, I remember I think I got a sandwich there or something. So you were doing stand-up and a server. This is how you were getting by.
No, this is the early days. So I was at the Groundlings. This is when I started doing, I was in like, you know, improv. Did you always do stand-up or did you start with improv?
I always did stand-up. I never really took an improv class. I wish I had. I mean, I'd love to know, like, I would love to have that hard baked in, all the rules and stuff. Whenever you see good improvisation, not bad.
Yeah.
You know, shitty improvisation is the most horrific that you ever saw in your life. But when you see the good stuff is from a comics perspective, and it's so infuriating.
I know.
Because they're just generating, like, actually funny content in the moment, no problem. And that's pretty weird. And completely mysterious, but it's the rules, right? That's it's because they have a set of like a chemistry that just they know how to like have a formula that works.
And I didn't like that. I didn't like those rules. And also I wanted to play a man. I remember I wanted to do male characters. I thought that would be so funny. And they're like, no, you can't. You can only be a woman. I'm like,
what?
Stupid. Yeah. I thought, oh, how sad. Like, so I don't know. I just didn't, but it was good. It was good to know that if you're funny or not, you know, and then I started doing stand up later, but yeah, waiting tables. I worked every crummy retail job. I worked in a parking booth in college. I've had a lot of terrible jobs for sure. What's the crappiest you've had?
The crappiest job I had was, a telemarketing job selling credit card insurance. Oh, the worst. I lasted 1 week on that job. And because they paid you for training. I remember going in for training, hearing that you get like 4 days off a year or something, realizing I could pretty much leave training, take the 4 paid days off, and then just quit. The second worst job was Clifford and Wells. I was a telemarketer. I took catalog orders at a Clifford and like a catalog company. So people would call in the old days. They don't even do that anymore. Ordering like fucking sweaters and shit. And you'd have to put codes in.
Oh my God. Yeah, I did telemarketing. I did for the Hollywood Bowl, which was actually pretty amazing because...
That's cool.
Yeah, I got to learn like who Gustavo Dudamel was. You know, I didn't fucking know any of that stuff. And I was surprised that people spent thousands of dollars a year for like memberships to whatever, concerts and stuff. It blew me away. I was like, oh, rich people do crazy stuff. Like
right.
$3,000 a year to go see concerts? You're out of your mind.
$3,000. Remember that? Like that how much money that was? Like you're like that would fucking change my life. And you're like spending that to see Dudamel?
I know. I think $3,000 at one point a month was my whole nut that I had to cover to stay afloat when I was doing comedy. Like I got life down to such a science. Like rent, I got down to like $700 in LA, which was amazing.
Yep.
And then, you know, your car is what, like 500 with, oh God, it was so awful. And you just prayed that you didn't have to get dental work done or that like you didn't have a medical issue.
Oh my God. I can remember that. I can remember once getting an ache in my mouth and I'm like, oh fuck, that's a cavity.
That's it.
And I can't afford that.
No.
Like what am I going to do? I'm going to have to do what Tom Hanks did in Castaway. Like I'm going to have to like find a spoon and wrench it out of my mouth. And then it just stopped hurting. Probably because the nerve died. It's not like your teeth heal.
But it stopped hurting? That never.
It was a miracle. It was a miracle. Maybe God healed it. I don't know. But it was a miracle.
Or the aliens, because I hear some of them have healing properties.
That's what they say. Yeah, they say they can heal you. Whatever it is no different than what it's always been, I guess, is where we're at now. Just because I had this like unnerving moment when I realized, is it just going to start out? Like, are they just going to rediscover what like ancient people knew to be the truth, but with new words? And then we're just going to be like back where we were. There's angels, there's demons, there's heaven, there's hell, but they're going to use different words for it. Like, they're going to say it's an alternate universe that is right next to ours. And that's where gravity comes from. But that alternate universe is heaven. And this is earth. But they won't ever use the word heaven or earth. They'll just say, oh, it's an alternate universe that does have sentient beings in it that have figured out a way forever to appear in this universe because there's some connection between the two. Mostly they don't give a shit about us, but probably something we're doing is disrupting their universe. So they're like, and they can't destroy this universe without destroying theirs. So they have to work with us or something. I don't know.
Oh, that's
it was a really creepy moment. And they can't destroy this universe without destroying theirs. So they have to work with us or something. I don't know.
Oh, that's
it was a really creepy moment. I don't know what it is. I mean, what do you think it is? I know you have been following it as much as I have.
Let me tell you, I never was an alien person until David Grush came out on News Nation.
And really?
Because I studied philosophy in college. I have a bachelor's degree in philosophy. So the first 20 years of my life, I was like rooted in like logic and reason and science.
Yeah.
And then the more I lived, the more I was like, oh, there's fucking zero reason or logic in the universe. This is nuts. Especially the last few, 10 years, I would say, of being an adult where you're like, well, what? Like a pandemic and like,
right,
a reality, guys.
Absurd. You mean like? I wish I had taken philosophy. You mean like it's from a philosophical perspective, your view is everything's kind of absurd, like a kind of like confusing nihilism or something.
Well,
like
I believe that people were rooted in reason and logic, and that people were rational beings that made decisions based on good ideas. And then you're like, no, that's clearly not the case. That's not the case. And
right.
Then I became more nihilistic and like everything's chaos and absurd and terrible. And then now I'm like, well, no, wait a minute. If this alien stuff is legit and it's kind of crazy because it fucking is, that just blows everything apart. What is it? And now I fear, because I get all my information from TikTok. That's where I fucking think the truth actually is TikTok.
That's where lies.
They're putting it out there. People are putting out their real shit.
Yeah.
And on TikTok, the word on the street is that like this is going to be like another military thing where it's like that movie Independence Day where we're going to paint them as like the aliens are these awful people and we have to fight them and the world is going to come together. We're going to fight the aliens,
right.
Which is a sad narrative if that's the story. And I don't buy that one. I don't like that one, but that seems to be where humanity tends to go.
Yeah, we're definitely dumb in that way. Like that's the ultimate resolution of a problem is like blow it up. And that's what's going to like join the planet together attacking these things. Yeah, I've heard that theory. I've heard the idea of like no, what's happened, you know, the fossil fuel industry is the deep state, basically. Like everything depends on fossil fuel, and there's no way around that. So the people who are in control of oil control everything, because if oil goes away, civilization collapses. And so in that group of people is more tight-knit than we think, and these aliens or whatever it is apparently represent the potential of a energy source that is infinitely better than oil. And so to allow whatever that technology is out into the scientific community would be the end of oil and the power associated with it, which is why they don't want it out there. That's the only reason. It's too disruptive to like the people running the show.
Well, yeah, you I know you're talking like they call it like the anti-gravity. Technology, yeah. I mean, then you've destroyed all these industries that the world, like, we've been fighting for that shit, right? East versus West and all that,
right?
Going, no.
Yeah, just oil, it's just oil, man. It's a god damn it, it'd be great to have a fucking oil well come in. Have you seen There Will Be Blood? Just that move, that blasting up in the sky, your fucking earth is just, you've been jerking off the earth. It sprays this beautiful fucking blast of black jizz. You're gonna be rich. No one can stop you. Oh, you could just feel it. Like those people are in control. And isn't that what that movie was about? That movie was about oil slapping religion in the face. Like, fuck your God. This is the real God, motherfucker.
For sure. You know, I did a lot of military gigs, like USO military gigs before I had kids. And I went all over, you know, I did Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, UAE, Somalia, all these different bases for the Americans. And they sit you down. They're very gracious when you arrive and they give you a tour of the base. And then they give you a PowerPoint presentation on why we are here. Why are we in Saudi Arabia? Why are we in Afghanistan? And I remember being like, these presentations don't really make sense. There's something we're in Kyrgyzstan. Wait, why? Why are we?
Why are we in Kyrgyzstan? You might wonder.
And it's awfully interesting, especially in the Middle East. We're all over Qatar, Bahrain, Dubai.
Strange.
Yeah, like what possible interest? Why are we in the Middle East?
Peace. You know, we got to bring peace to the world. That's all. I mean, coincidentally, the places that need peace do happen to have a lot of oil.
Yeah.
But that's just a coincidence. We 100% just want to bring democracy to the world. It's very cynical, but it's true. And you see why. I mean, it's like, okay, fine. Let's not go there. Okay, hippie. Great. Yeah. We won't go there. So I guess we're out of oil now. Oh, and I guess like we'll go into our own natural reserves and destroy all of the environment getting to the oil. Is that what you want? Hippie, is that what you fucking want? You got something else? Can you know where a patchouli mine is? Can we run our cars on patchouli, motherfucker? You think I want to be here in Qatar?
Qatar's terrible. Really is terrible.
I don't want to be in Qatar. I want to be home. Yeah. But yeah, it's an awful mess.
It's a mess.
It's an awful mess. And these things, whatever they are, they represent some possibility of like liberation. Now, if you consider the idea that like they might give us a way out of the earth, like this dimension, then what if they, you know what I mean? Like they might offer a way out.
Yeah, please.
You're just trapped. Look, they're like, this is what we do. Every once in a while, a kind of bubble forms underneath actual reality. It populates itself with sentient beings like you. Inevitably, a hierarchical structure forms with a bunch of assholes at the top who manipulate and confuse you into thinking you're mortal and that you depend on them. You don't. There's billions of universes to choose from. You can bring your family, your friends. That could be one thing they would like, because then no one would stay here. Like everyone would just split.
That would be great. It's like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, right? Yeah. This idea that we can have a passport that takes you all over the galaxy. It is stupid to think that we're just meat bound here.
And we wouldn't stay. Would you stay? I mean, if you knew safely, you could, if you wanted, you could do trips at first.
Yeah.
Completely safe wormhole teleportation. Bring the Seguras to Alpha Centauri to bathe in the hot springs of Dunagore or whatever.
That would be amazing. I would love that. Would you do it?
Of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. Because, I mean, it's like we are marooned on an ball-shaped island that is being controlled by tech billionaires. Like, that's where we're at right now. And they depend on us to enjoy the status that they have and all the privilege they have, because if all of us had the same stuff they had, they would be irrelevant. So they depend on that pyramid shape to be even remotely interesting. I mean, think of would anyone ever say Mark Zuckerberg's name again if we were all as rich as Mark Zuckerberg? Like if we all had that level, no one would think about him. Oh, no one would give a shit. The only reason they're interesting is because they've accrued wealth. That's all they've got. I mean, personality-wise, no offense, Zuckerberg. I really love Instagram. I think that's your fault. But you know what I mean? Like, I'm saying, like, then suddenly the playing field becomes one based on something other than wealth, you know? And then what? Like, Elon Musk, Zuckerberg, Bezos, Gates. Go down the list. Take away their wealth or make everyone equally wealthy. And then what? They have nothing. They're gone. They're irrelevantized.
It's so true. And it's even like celebrity. I think I used to be way more dazzled by the idea of famous people.
Me too.
And then you meet enough of them and you're like, oh yeah, that's good. I'm all right. I don't need to be friends with anybody but the people I've known for 20 years.
It's so disappointing. It's so disappointing because you want, the dream would be you meet the celebrity that you have seen on TV and that there is like a remarkable extra quality to them that isn't in all the other people you've met. But it's then you realize, oh my God, oh my God, they're just like everyone else. Oh my God.
And even worse now because of Instagram and TikTok, which God bless it, because it is my source of primary entertainment. I don't even really watch it. I watch alone other than that, like, there's not a ton of stuff I'm into because I can get the real deal. I can get real mental illness. I can get real fucking juice, feeling, emotion, just right there. You know, I can watch a celebrity have a massive emotional breakdown on TikTok, and it's so compelling. But the point being that because there are no barriers anymore to celebrity, so there's very little mystery, and you start to realize, like, oh, these people are bipolar. That's why they're such big personalities, or this person's an alcoholic, and that's why they're able to, like, whatever, turn it on here and there, and you're like, God, there's something good to that mystery.
You're going there more. Like, I know you're getting entertainment from it, but you're kind of a miner in a way. You know what I mean? Like, you go down into the TikTok mine. You've found ways to burrow deep into the subterranean tunnels that the algorithm will normally never take a person to when you first encounter TikTok. Like, you've burrowed deep in there, and then you share these incredible things that you find with all of us, making you my source for, like, what are the top nervous breakdowns happening on the planet today? You're like a curator of nervous breakdowns.
I know.
Because there's many nervous breakdowns happening at any given moment. You find the ones that are so entertaining, so unique, so fascinating. How long does it, okay, let me ask you. How many of these do you find per hour, would you say? Or is it per day? Like, how many?
Can I tell you something? It is a passion of mine. Thank you, first of all, for acknowledging my work.
Thank you for sharing your work with us.
And I can't quantify it, but if you would ask my staff, because I email it to Nadav, I email these TikToks for the show, and it's just a flurry of all day. If I get on it, it's just like, it's so quick. The algorithm's so great on TikTok. Yeah. It's so precise. So I really have to be clean about how I scroll, how I like things. You don't want to like anything too normal.
Oh, because if you spend too much time looking at something dull just because you're not paying attention, now you've taken steps back. Now the algorithm is like, oh wait, she doesn't want people having insane PCP fueled breakdowns. She wants, like, videos of how to knit, I guess.
Whatever. No. Yeah. You gotta be real cautious. Don't fall into those traps or dances or anything like that. But what's really great about TikTok is that I used to have to go to the documentary world to see nut jobs, you know, like, it was always about finding those weird documentaries. Yeah. You know, Gigi Allen or just like weird punk thing. And now it's like, that's the stuff I love. I don't know why. I just love watching weirdos. It's so fun. I don't know why. I just love watching weirdos. It's so fun.
I think it's really healthy because one of the things with Aaron that like I like things she doesn't like. She likes things I don't like. But one thing she likes is commercials. Yeah, she thinks I think she like finds them kind of comforting or something, you know, they bring you back to the old days when you had no choice but to watch commercials. And I don't like commercials. They freak me out. And like that started the first time I took LSD and watched TV and saw a commercial on acid and was like, what the fuck is this? This is, I don't know why it's bad, but it's maybe the worst thing. When I watch them, I get really like anxious. And I think it's because the corporations present a parody of reality. Like,
yeah,
the families in commercials, the friendships in commercials, the parties in commercials, none of that's real. Like, no one is experiencing life like the people in a commercial, but by slanting reality, so it's like you're looking at like the most vapid, shallow alternate reality, like where people are just happy with their chips and they like their salsa that fixed their problem for the day. Is they needed a good queso dip, and now, you know what I mean, they, not only are they happy, but they're cool, they're beautiful, they're like sexy somehow. So it's so deceptive and fucked up, it freaks me out. But I think what's cool, what you, when you go into where you're going, it's like you're going out of the Truman Show bubble of default reality, and you're witnessing what's really going on out there, which is
that's
what's really going on, is this stuff.
Like, yeah, it's like we finally got to like pull the curtain back, because for years our entertainment has been dictated by these big networks who, like you say, they just sterilize existence. And you and I are same age. We grew up watching these bullshit sitcoms. My parents were foreigners, so like growing up, I learned about American. I thought everybody actually lived like Three's Company or, you know, Out of This World. I remember that one where she could stop time. But like, I thought that Americans really did talk that way to each other. So I was always, well, at our house, this is not what's happening. You know, there's a cultural thing, but also like my parents are fucking crazy. So I don't know. It's more comforting for me to see weirdos, because then I'm like, yeah, I get that. Because you're just one step away from being these folks. It's like,
I've been those folks. I'm not one step away. I've had nervous breakdown. Are you fucking kidding? I've lost the fucking track. I've gone way off the track.
I know. And like, so there's this one that you and I are interested in. She's a mother of four, and she's hyper vigilant, I would say. We're going to Disney World, and here's our day. I'm going to wake up at 4 a.m. I'm going to exercise, and then by 5 a.m. we're at the park. And I get that part, right? Because if you have kids, you do have to be extremely organized. And like, I can go there if I wanted to.
Yeah, well, for those of you, Aaron and Christina discovered this. I don't know how to put, like, it's a TikTok mom. Maybe you could just describe exactly what it is, so people can kind of get an idea in their head for what this is. Like, it's as clearly as you can describe it, because I don't have the audio. I don't know even how to. If I had it, I couldn't play it. I'm not organized like you guys are.
So it's a woman. It's a mother of four. It's her account on TikTok, and it's under the assumption or whatever the premise that she's showing you how to mom hack, right? There's these tips and tricks of be super organized, super on top of your game, and do everything right as a mom. I think that's the underlying premise. So like, here's how you homeschool I'm a mom of four boys, and we're going to homeschool. I wake up at 5 a.m. I do my exercise. I read for 2 minutes, and then I go make all the beds in the house. And then I wake up the children, and then we bring out our board, and we write down a Bible verse for the day. And then I take out all my products, and then I organize. And it's, again, I think an attempt to like be helpful, but I think that it's so funny because there's so much anxiety under it that you're like, aggressive. Oh my God, I feel like I want to die. Like, it's
aggressive.
It's aggressive.
It's aggressive. No, this is like in Buddhism, there's this like, aggression is one of the root causes of suffering. And so aggression, if it leaks into anything you do, it kind of irrelevantizes the merit of the thing that you're doing. So if you go out to do good work in the world, but it's actually aggression disguised as good work, you're really punching, but you're making it seem like you're handing out soup or whatever. It has the opposite effect. Like, it doesn't really do anything for anybody. It just,
oh my God. That's what I needed to hear today. That's so crazy, because I was sitting down trying to write jokes. And if I'm in a space that's aggressive, what you're saying, it's not
going to happen. It's not funny. It's going to be all pissed and sour.
Yes.
Yeah. I hate it when that's the shit that's coming out of me. It's like, ah, fuck. I just need to stop because I'm too pissed off right now and everything's all eh.
Yeah, will you tell me what to read? I'd like to read more about that because I couldn't put my finger on it today. I'm like, this feels gross. I don't want to put this in the world. This isn't nice. This isn't who I am.
I'll see if I can find it. It's like, it's kind of a, this, it's not obscure in Buddhism, but it's a, the, where I read it, the place I found it was in this weird book I picked up at a thrift store by Chogyam Trungpa. It had all these mandalas or like sort of visual depictions of like, I guess you could say imbalance and harmony, basically there's these, in Buddhism, there are these things called the paramitas, which are these like good qualities, generosity being one of them, or patience being one of them. And then if you have a thing, then you have its opposite, you know, obviously the opposite of generosity is selfishness, but weirdly there's a similarity in the two because you know, selfishness is really just trying to be generous to yourself and not other people. So if you can shift that to other people instead of yourself, then you will have achieved this like paramita. It's whatever you're experiencing is the path to something more enlightened. That's the idea. It's really cool. But yeah, so it was, I'm trying to specifically remember. This one was about aggressive generosity. So, he described it, it's as though someone had a giant barrel of honey and pushed it over on top of you. That's what it feels like. So this is when you're with someone who has got all the stuff and they are giving you stuff and taking you places and they're just, it's amazing. But there's a sense of like, ooh, this doesn't feel quite right because it's not actual generosity. It's aggressive generosity. It has this anger underneath it, or a kind of like something, there's a twist going on here that and you're complicit because you're letting them dump the honey on top of you. So you're in this gross, perverse LARP where you're pretending to be not like in it for some of the stuff, and it both sides feel shame. And yeah, aggressive generosity, aggressive, whatever the paramita may be, aggressive patience, aggressive, wherever aggression gets in, it's fucks it up.
Yes. And I find that I get there when I'm like, I haven't had enough time for myself. That's all it is. You know, especially you understand, you baby, you know, when you're in a constant state of, it's just too much. I get crunchy. I get crispy.
Okay. I guess Buddhist lecture part two, aversion. that's what we call aversion. So like aversion is where you don't want to be where you're at, and it sucks. It's a form of suffering. It sucks. So this is when you're like wherever and you're just like, you know, you're dreaming of like finally, whatever it is, putting the kids down or getting out of that meeting or getting out of traffic. That's aversion. And if I had to pick, I think I would choose aggression over aversion. Cause at least when you're aggressive, you're like, you're pushing back. You're fighting against it. With aversion, you're like shrinking away. You don't want to be there. You want to disassociate. Yeah. Oh, it's the worst.
Yeah. So how do I get out of this?
Aversion?
Yeah.
Well, in Buddhism, they say like, kratom.
What?
Yeah. The recommendation in Buddhism is like kratom, or if you can't get any of that, just like opiates. Benzos.
Yeah, I love those.
Xanax, baby. That's the ultimate paramita. Benzos. Just sedate the shit out of yourself. Try to like stay completely sedated as long as you can. Like the idea in basically Buddhism says during the day, try to get hammered in some way, shape, or form.
And are they being serious? Are you being serious?
No. It's quite the,
I need help.
I'm sorry, my any Buddhist friends out there for blasphemy.
I was like, yeah.
If only that was the
pills today.
That'd be so cool. If that was, it's like medication, not meditation. It's actually, you know, this missing. It's a misspelling of medication.
Yeah.
The idea would be, so when you're feeling aversion, anger, whatever the flavor of suffering is, you have a delusion. The delusion is if I get from point A to point B, when I get to point B, I'll feel better than I do now. And so for me, that might be, okay, 2 more hours of like childcare, because I'm thinking about myself, 2 more hours of child, 2 more hours, 3 more hours, 2 more hours of childcare, get the kids in bed. And right now, because Aaron is taking care of the baby, you know, make sure she's got food and everything. And then somewhere after that, I will play Diablo 4, this very addictive, narcotic, technological shit drug.
I heard you talking about this on your last episodes or two back or something. I mean, the way you described it, it sounds like the greatest thing on the planet.
It's just heroin. It's digital heroin. So then I'll get to that point. And the dream I have is when I'm playing that, now I'll feel better. Or the way Trungpa Rinpoche talks about it is, it's like, the idea is you get home after work and you sit down on the couch and you go, is a tiny, infinitesimally small peak at what enlightenment is. Except that happens all day long. You don't need to be point A, point B, point C. Every day, every moment is that because you're no longer fighting against the universe and running away from that feeling. So that's the, I'm sorry, I'm going on too long.
Lexapro, it's the same thing.
Lexapro, actually. Lexapro is one of the names of one of the great Buddhist scriptures, the Sutta of Lexapro.
That's right.
No, you, the idea is you, if you can, it's, you know what it is? When Aaron was giving birth, howling like a banshee. We had this wonderful midwife, and she said, I know this seems like the opposite of logic, but when it gets as painful as it could possibly be, go towards that, push into that, mm-hmm. breathe into that. That is how the baby will come. And that is, I'm like, fuck, that's it. She just gave like a Dharma talk. When you're feeling the aversion, don't flee from it. Don't run for it. Or peel away the story about it and just experience the feeling of dissatisfaction purely with no story and sit with it with no intent of anything other than fully experiencing it as it is, minus the story, minus why you think you don't want to be there, why you think it'll be better somewhere else, fully in that experience. And if you can get to that place, suddenly it stops. It's no longer, it's just riding a wave. It's another aspect of your day. And then suddenly you're fine where you're at. And you're just where you're at. Anyway, that's sort of a shitty rendition of it, is like training yourself to not flee from those difficult emotional states and fully be in them, and then see if you can be in them with a non-judgmental awareness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what we do in therapy, right?
Yes.
You just kind of, and then you, yeah. And that's true. It does dissipate. That's so crazy. So I shouldn't get day drunk or eat Pop-Tarts.
Eat them. That's where it gets really cool, is like in some forms of Buddhism, tantric Buddhism, it's like, no, eat the idea is like, do whatever you're doing, try to do it from without the story. Try to, you know what I mean? So just because the idea really is, yes, you are doing these things. Yes, you are feeling horrible. Yes, there is suffering, but what is the suffering happening inside of? What is, where is all of this taking place? What is it, what gives it form? And the thing that gives it form is this non-judgmental awareness, this state of emptiness is what they call it in Buddhism. It has to exist in something. And right now you are associating yourself with the stuff, but you start retraining yourself to actually begin to associate yourself with the field of awareness that it's happening within. And instead of the stuff, it doesn't negate the stuff. It doesn't, it's not nihilism. It doesn't eradicate the authenticity of your experience, but it allows you a little like respite from it, in the sense that you also are the thing that it's happening within. You're not just the thing itself. And that is, right. That's cool.
Add to it. Yeah. You're not like, you're not the feeling. You're just the experiencer, right? Of the feeling. You're not composed of the feeling.
That. Yeah, exactly. Right. You're not your thoughts. You're not your body. You're not, but you are, in the sense that, yes, there is this stuff around you. Yes, there is relative reality. Yes, there is a you and your kids and your, in your life and your career, and all that stuff is like wonderful and incredibly rare to even be a human. But that shit is like being in a cave. And if you don't also reacquaint yourself with the fact that there's this other layer of reality that it's happening inside of, and that layer of reality is so like such a relief to make any kind of contact with. It's, I mean, did you take a lot of acid, Christina?
Yeah, and in my formative years I did. I started at like 14 and then I stopped by 21.
Did you ever take enough to cease to exist? Like, did you ever take enough to merge into the whole universe where you just stopped existing? You were just gone for a second, or there was no more you?
Yeah, for sure. Most definitely.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah.
That's what they're talking. That's I think what I liked about LSD was not so much the melting walls and all the stuff, but it was that moment where you actually are not identifying with your identity as a human anymore. And you're just empty space. You've merged. Unit of consciousness. That is what I think they're pointing at Buddhism, is that that is what you actually are. That is going to last longer than you. That's your birthright. That's what you are. If that wasn't there, then you would be in a hopeless, horrific condition.
Yeah. Now, and this goes back to the aliens,
yes.
Because this what the aliens are talking about with the consciousness thing. Like, aren't we all taking a part? We're all taking part of a collective.
Yeah.
Sort of consciousness, right?
Yeah. Shared mind. It's a shared mind with all these little meat bubble things inside the shared mind that, because they have a circumference of whatever their body is, they've gotten confused and they think that they are little puddles instead of an ocean or something like that. They don't realize, right. No, we're all floating in the ocean of consciousness, and we all are like imagining that my consciousness is separate from yours when it's not.
Yeah. I mean, but don't, and this might be the stupidest thing I've ever said in the world, but don't you think about like, how did these Buddhist motherfuckers come up with this? How many years ago? What is this? Pre-Christian society? These guys came up with all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty fucking amazing. This is all this stuff is psychology.
Let me look that up. The exact age of Buddhism.
Remixed. I mean, Freud and everybody. This is the same stuff over and over. But how did these guys, is this because the aliens taught them Buddhism?
Well, the Buddhists don't have any problem with aliens. They've always sort of accepted the universe as kind of teeming with life. How long ago did Buddha live? Let's see how long. Yeah. Let's see.
How do we know all this stuff?
563 to 483 BC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where?
That's a, well, and also where it gets really cool is the idea is that there's this sort of pop, like in Buddhism, there's a kind of acceptance of the multiverse. Like there's this, one of the scriptures is called the Lotus Sutra, and is like Buddha is delivering this sermon on Vulture Peak. I believe he like unfolds his tongue. You know, all this stuff is symbolic, but something, it's the most psychedelic scripture, but suddenly everyone listening to him can see him in various forms that are not human, and all these different forms through all these parallel timelines, giving the sermon to all those timelines in these different forms and different languages and different ways. So it's like there's an acceptance of the multiverse that we're just one part. And the idea is if you are living in a timeline where there was a Buddha, because there's many, many Buddhas, there's not just one. If you're living in a timeline where there's a Buddha, incredible good fortune. Incredible. Because there's some timelines where it hasn't come yet. Hi, speaking of Buddha. Hey.
He just came
How
in.
You doing?
This is my friend Duncan. You want to say
hello? Hi.
On camera. Say hi.
Hi.
How's your day going? When do you go back to school?
Thursday.
Are you excited?
A little bit.
Yeah, my kids are excited too. They're ready to get back. They're tired of hanging out all day with stinky old daddy.
What do you think?
Oh, I'm not ready.
You're not ready.
I'm still having fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Summer's fun. It lasts forever.
No, buddy. All right, we got to finish
up. We're going to wrap up. I'm taking up too much of your mom's time. Typically, podcasts should last an hour, and this one's going over a little bit.
Well, because we're so good together. Doesn't he look like Tom?
Yeah, I was just thinking that. He's a perfect mix of you two. You got the coolest parents. You're so lucky. Oh,
that's so sweet. I don't know if they feel that way, but you're cute.
Wait, he's Duncan?
That's Duncan.
I'm Duncan.
I've known him for a long time. Look at his cool beard. Doesn't he have a great beard?
I got to get it trimmed. Look at the grays. Ugh. And it's stinky. It's got gravy in it and all kinds of, ugh. It's a mess.
He's got three kids.
Yeah. We just had a baby. Yeah.
And just had a baby. Like a week ago, 2 weeks ago?
A week. A little over a week. She's a little over a week old. Great. Little girl.
You guys are really in it. All right. Scram. I'll see you in a minute.
We're almost done, kid.
All right. We're almost done, baby. I'll come see you. We have so much stuff going on in the house. We,
baby go. I'll see you after this appointment. Yeah.
We're painting, we're wallpapering. And, you know, I hate white walls. It's so depressing. So we're covering all the walls.
Did you know our house looks like mom?
No, not right now, baby. We're recording this. Maybe later. Duncan will come over and you can show me.
I want to see.
Go.
Yeah. Okay. Scram.
See you, kid.
Kick
Isn't
rocks.
That the best? Yeah. That's the best.
Kick rocks.
Not kick rocks. We get that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, with all the, you know, stuff, like, no matter what, there's nothing better than that.
Oh.
On planet Earth, if you're like whatever the thing is, a Buddha, the aliens, the whatever it is, you would not give that up for any of it.
Never, never, never in a gajillion years. The kids are the greatest joy of my life. Yeah. And it's
here, get out of here so I can talk about it.
Yeah, get out of here.
You can stay. I was about to wrap it up anyway. Perfect timing. Do you have a signal when someone's ear beating you about Buddhism for him to come in? Do you have a bell that rings in the other room? Bing, bing!
Oh. Okay, go a second. Let's talk. I do want to talk to you about one thing before we go. Go. Yeah. Oh, you mean it now. Now you're getting in trouble. You better go. She's going to lift you. She's going to lift you. Bye. Go, turkey legs.
Turkey legs.
Luck fix. Scram. You know, it's so funny. I was.
No!
Do you want me to cut that out?
Just don't show his face.
No problem.
Just don't.
You're fine with the audio? Okay.
You should. It's funny because I listened to your interview you did with Tom, which was so great. And I never listened to my husband on podcasts, but I just was like, I'm catching up on your stuff. And I was like, I'll listen to Duncan and Tom. It was so funny. I laughed because the dog pelt that was behind him.
he shouldn't have. I still think about that. Like, do I report it?
Terrible. But it's crazy because we both, having kids changed me in a different way. I think having kids for men can like ramp up their career stuff where they're like, I want to fucking conquer the world because you're now the pressure to be a provider. And I can't even imagine like providing for two little kids, a wife, like it's a lot, dude. But then the opposite happened to me, where I was like, I just want to stay home. I don't want to go outside.
Right.
I just want to look at my little face. I just want to nurture my children. It's kind of crazy. It's a different thing.
I can't think of the last time, sadly, I was like sitting in front of a campfire, but like, you know, you're sitting in front of the campfire and suddenly that's just all that matters. There's heat and it's that you're tuning into this thing that humans have been sitting around longer than we've been sitting around TV.
Yeah.
And you're just fine all of a sudden. Like you're like, this is more, this is real. All the other stuff, I don't know, but this is real. And I feel that way with the kids. It's like, whatever this stuff is happening in the world, it becomes secondary to this very simple, sometimes infuriatingly simple predicament we find ourselves in, which is that we are completely like lost in love. Like we're just, that's it. You're whatever the other stuff is, this is the primary fundamental anchor of your life. And that is such a great realignment, I think, that it's sad that people are so down on it these days, you know? And I get why they are. It's expensive as fuck. I get it. It's almost impossible.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant fire. I like starting fires, too.
I'm sorry. Did I sound like I was talking about kids?
Yeah, no, I knew what you're talking about.
I'm talking about the pleasure of starting a fresh fire.
Of course. It's kids, the best.
But my God, that feeling. And I knew you were into it. I know Tom's into it because he's talked to me about it. But that feeling when it just first catches and you're watching it go up the gasoline trail.
Oh my God. And the panic of like, will I get caught?
Yeah.
This is the national forest, but still it's fun. Yeah. But yeah,
I agree with you.
I do. I think it's fun. It's the risk. It's risk.
No, I mean, it's risky. I just prefer structures. Just watching a structure, you know, turn into smoke.
Mm. What are you talking about? Like, did you start the Getty fire? Was that you then? On the
farm? Oh, really? You can look up the case. You can look up the case. And I was acquitted completely. So that's going to be my answer.
Because that was crazy because it spread to Bel Air. And I was like, there's no way they're going to let Bel Air roast. And they did. They really did.
Honestly, it's like, I wish I could take credit for that one. But I don't know who did that. I have a feeling that somebody I'm talking to maybe doesn't just like setting forest fires. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. You know I didn't start the Getty fire. Come on. Come on.
You weren't even learning it.
You're not fooling anybody. We all know. Come on. Take credit where credit's due. You're so humble. That was such a great fire. So artistic. Like, I got all the commentary in it. It's so cool to start it at the Getty. It's brilliant. And you, the winds, you knew where they were blowing. We know. I know. I mean, my God, I've looked up to you as a fire starter for years.
Yeah,
I learned a lot of what I do from you and Tom, honestly. Like,
but it is true that boys like to start fires. I feel like every guy that I've talked to on my podcast, they have started fires in their youth. I think you have, didn't you say?
Yeah, I set a field on fire accidentally. Yeah, it's not like we like starting fires. It's that we like explosions, like, and we like the power. Yeah. And like, my God, when you first figure out you can take a magnifying glass and set shit on fire with a magnifying glass. How do you not start a fire? You're going to leaves or whatever. But I don't want to hold you up from your kids. And honestly, I will cut out the fire part if you, I don't know where you're at legally with that.
Right. No, it's fine. It's long. It's been 7 years or something.
Statute of limitations.
Yes.
You don't want to look that up?
No,
want to look up to make sure the limitations?
They have no extradition
None in California. California is the only state that can't extradite. Also, the new laws in California, it's now completely legal to start fires.
Oh, that's right. It's like a certain amount of damage before they can
It's like you have to cause like over $5 million worth of fire damage. They can't fuck with you.
That's right.
I love that law. They're so smart over there. Hey, I don't want to hold you up. We got to do these more often. I love doing you guys are the best. I love going on your show. It's so cool. You're in town now. So one day we will hang out.
Once you're out, you guys are out of, you're in triage.
Once we're out of triage,
this is the,
we will.
This is tonight. The great time.
You are the best. God bless you. Thank you so much. You got any shows coming up? Anything that you need to plug?
Oh, ChristinaPOnline.com for shows. I'm doing Vegas, which will be cool in October. Denver, Comedy Vux. I'm excited about that. And Canada. Go back to Canada. I haven't been back since
Okay. All the links for these shows will be at DuncanTrussell.com, or I'll direct you right to Christina's website. Thank you so much, Mommy.
I love you. Mom.
Hare Krishna. That was Christina Segura, everybody. God bless her. Definitely check out her podcast, Where My Mom's At, or the wildly popular Your Mom's House with the genius Tom Segura. Come see me at any of the shows I mentioned. Zany's in Rosemont, Tacoma, Washington, at the Tacoma Comedy Club, Cobb, San Francisco, Helium, Philadelphia, Spokane Comedy Club, Spokane, Washington, Wise Guys, Salt Lake City, Comedy Zone, Charlotte, Funny Bone Columbus, and subscribe to my Patreon, won't you? Patreon.com/DTFH. But if you don't feel like doing any of that shit, I get you. I understand. I still love you. I get it. I don't want to do anything either. Just want to play Diablo. That's all I want to do. Play Diablo, get covered in some kind of neural gel that makes me come for 7 hours straight, which is generally how long I play per session. That would be paradise. Maybe we'll get there one day. I will see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.